Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Welcome everybody to episode number 219 of Linux in the Ham Shack. It's the Weekender. And we're going to talk about some weekend type things. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right. So that's all of us. We are all actually here right now. We have a couple of folks listening in the chat room. We've got Gene, BX8AAD. And we've got, I believe it's Dave, right? KB0OWD. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure I'll be corrected forthwith. but this is the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet, and it's more than amateur radio. It's Linux and open source and science and technology, and in the case of the Weekender, everything but those things. So
well, we do include some.
Well, that's right, we do try some keep amateur it radios. You know, semi-relevant anyway. So the first thing we'll talk about is some of the stuff you can do this weekend in the amateur radio world, and Bill's going to tell us about what those things are.
That's right. This weekend in amateur radio, you have some contests going on this weekend. Two of the big ones I pulled out were we have two big QSO parties. Hopefully one Russ will get on. Ha ha.
Not going
to
happen.
If the baseball game gets snowed out, maybe you can find a shack to squeeze or nestle yourself into.
Perhaps so.
The Missouri QSO party and the Mississippi QSO party both start on April 7th at 1400 Zulu. And it looks like they take a break in the middle of the night for some reason. I don't know why, but at least the Missouri one does. I guess nobody works after 400 Zulu in the morning on the April 8th. But yeah, they both continue on until sometime on the 8th. So check all those QSO parties out. And most of your current loggers, you can log both sets of counties and stuff like that, and then split it apart afterwards, or just submit the whole log with the all your exchanges and stuff like that in it, and let the people figure it out. Contest next weekend, we have the QRP ARCI, ARCI Spring QSO Party. That's a big QRP event going on. It's a 24-hour event on April 14th, starting at 0 Zulu and running to 2359 Zulu. We also have three QSO parties, big QSO party weekend, New Mexico QSO Party, Georgia QSO party, and the North Dakota QSO party. So if you haven't got North Dakota in your worked all states, that's the time to find the three of them that are over there and work them. So yeah, enjoy that next weekend. That'll be on the April 14th through the 15th, or the 15th through the 16th, depending upon the start time. Yeah. So anyway, it'll be next weekend, basically, or the following weekend. The only special event station I picked out that looked interesting was this one here running next week from April 10th to April 15th, from 1300 Zulu to 2200 Zulu, 2000 Zulu. W4S in Lakeland, Florida. They're at the Sun and Fun, and they're going to have the amateur radio station there on 10 meters, 15 meters, and 20 meters. And the QSO information for that is Bob Flynn, WA4OAB, in Dunedin, Florida. And that's the big the Sun and Fun event. I think that's the big air show / balloon thing that they got going on there.
I don't know. Where did Bill go?
Bill, come back.
Okay, hopefully I didn't knock myself off because I was trying to get all the other crap off the network. Don't think I disabled myself.
Uh-oh. Oh, there is.
You must be falling apart.
No, I tried to block everything on the network to, you know, deal with the issues that we've been having. And apparently that caused the router to drop you for a second. So you were like at Dunedin.
I was doing Dunedin. Oh, I just mentioned that the Sun and Fun is, which of course you already have my recording anyway. The Sun and Fun is a great week of aviation related stuff there in Central Florida. So check it out. It normally, I think they have the balloons and they have like a little mini air show or a little fly in or something like that. But it goes on all week there in Central Florida and Lakeland. So it's pretty cool to go to.
All right. Very cool. So try out some of those things this weekend. I, you know, might try and do the CUSO party, but I'm guessing that's probably not going to happen since we're going to be gone pretty much all weekend. And I don't have mobile HF at the moment. Are you gone again, Bill?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
You technically have a mobile unit, I think, there. I was thinking, don't you have like a Linko DX70TH?
I might have one of those. One thing I do lack, however, is an HF mobile antenna.
Oh, just load up some wire and you're fine. put the jumper cables on the back of the coax connector and light up the car.
I'll just hook one wire to the frame and one wire to, I don't know, I'll just drag a piece of long wire behind the car and see what happens.
There you go.
Nice. See what kind of ground wave we can get.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right. So anyway, very cool. Get out there, participate in some CUSO parties, make some contacts, you know, do the amateur radio thing. Also, we should mention at this point that the GoFundMe campaign for Hamvention is live. We have had several donations so far. We'd love to get some more. And if you could share, let everyone know about the Hamvention campaign. And that's all we're going to say about that. And we'll see everyone in Xenia in mid-May. And let's see, the LHS Ham Radio Challenge, I didn't update because I didn't get around to it. So what should we challenge people to do in ham radio other than like do CUSO parties?
Do CUSO parties. Well, I think the, is that coming up this weekend? I think this weekend is the other, I'm just pulling this off the cuff here, is the FT8 de-expedition mode number 2 is running on April 7th, if I remember correctly. So that'll be this weekend. If you want to, you haven't been on FT8 or haven't tried FT8, you should get on there and take a look at it. They'll be doing their test with that new de-expedition mode. So check out their website for that information and try to make them FT8 contacts. And here, why don't you try to make it on 10 meters? That would be a good one. I saw a couple little mentions here and there on the interwebs about people making some interesting DX contacts this week here on FT8 on 10 meters. So don't be afraid to tune your rig there, even though it's a little quiet, and go ahead and send some CQs in the middle of the day and see what you can get.
Yeah, that sounds good. That will be on April 7th. I am looking at the information right now.
I remembered them.
And the latest version of WSJTX, by the way, is 1.9.0 RC3.
Okay, number 3 is out.
Yep, so make sure you've got the latest and greatest when you want to try this FT8 de-expedition on the 7th.
Awesome.
All right, cool. So let's move on to some open source type topics, and we can talk about NixOS, which is a distribution you could go ahead and try. It aims to improve the state of the art in system configuration management. In existing distros, actions such as upgrades are dangerous, Will Robinson. Actions such as, I already said that, upgrading a package. See what happens when you go off script? I know Gary's listening. Upgrading a package can cause other packages to break. Upgrading an entire system is much less reliable than reinstalling from scratch. And you can't safely test what the results of a configuration change will be. You cannot easily undo changes to the system and so on. This is, however, mitigated somewhat if you're using a VM environment and use snapshotting. That's one right way you can deal with this. In other distributions, NixOS wants to change, however, this problem with upgrades going haywire. So that's something you can try. It's at nixos.org. A link, of course, will be in the show notes. So did you try NixOS?
No, I didn't. I was starting to download it, and I didn't get around to actually trying it. But I started looking at their download page, and I thought this was the most interesting part, is that they already have VirtualBox appliances. They have Amazon EC2 AMIs, so you have a quick launch button, so you can launch a EC2 instance up on Amazon if you already have an account, and it'll go ahead and spin one up on various regions for you, depending upon which region you actually are on. Also has some blobs for Microsoft Azure. And yeah,
Azure. I was,
Azure.
Anyway, yeah, so I thought it was pretty cool that they had all that stuff already there and kind of ready to go. So yeah, I will try this and take a look at it. I won't uninstall Solus though, so too bad, so sad. They've already figured out the update issue problem. So, but yeah, this looks pretty interesting. Give it a try. I just happened to notice that they just had a release. 1803 was released here, and it was up on DistroWatch. So I was like, oh, I hadn't seen this one before. So, and it looks pretty interesting. Definitely a little different, and it's out of the, I believe the Netherlands is where it's sourced from. So. Take a look at that and see if you think it's interesting too.
I am going to take a look at it. It does sound interesting, and it's not Chinese, so I'm much happier about that.
Not Deep End.
That's right. It's not Deep End or the other one.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I was looking on the interwebs for some open source stuff to do this weekend, and I couldn't really find anything. There are a couple of symposiums/conferences coming up next week, however, which happen to do with open source topics. The first one is NSDI, which is the Usenix Symposium on Network Systems Design and Implementation. And they do have an open source component to that because there are a lot of open source systems, of course. That's a fairly pricey conference, though. It is something you could do, and maybe you can get work to send you to it. Of course, if you were going to do that, you probably would have already signed up for it before now, or at least, you know, you would have tried anyway. And the other thing that you might want to do next week, if you've got some time and happen to be somewhere near Tennessee, is check out DrupalCon. And that's if anyone actually still uses Drupal. Does anyone still use Drupal? They have a con. but that, of course, is an open source content management system. And apparently they're all getting together in Music City to talk about it all next week. So, you know, if you want to talk Drupal and open source and things like that, you could do that. But for just like local Linux fests and stuff, couldn't find anything for, you know, the next couple of weeks. There are definitely Linux cons coming up, things like Linux Fest Northwest and Southeast Linux Fest, and probably more that I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head, because I think Southeast is in June and Northwest is like in May, right? Or April?
Northwest?
Yeah, Linux Fest Northwest, the one in Washington.
That's in like 2 weeks.
That's in 2 weeks.
Or,
okay.
Or 3 weeks. It's at the end of the month. It's at the end of the month. Yeah.
Yeah. It says last weekend of April.
All right. Well, so that's pretty cool. We'll probably mention that again in the next one of these. But so
yeah, I still have my room set up for that. I haven't committed to canceling yet.
You should see if they can set you up a booth there.
It's probably a little late for that.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Southeast Linux Fest is June 8th through the 10th. Ohio Linux Fest is what?
October
12th through 13th.
Right. I think Texas is in August.
Let's see.
I think there's a Kansas City Linux Fest. That might have already happened,
though. Texas Linux is June 8th and 9th in Austin. Kansas Linux Fest.
Yeah, we're all frantically Googling while everybody could just be looking this up on their own, but that's okay.
Right, yeah.
That's in Wichita, I think.
Yeah, Friday, May. Oh, no, this was last year.
Yeah, so KLF may not be a thing anymore. Now,
Mad Dog was there.
If it is a thing, we'll let you know about it when it's a thing. So, all right. So there's a bunch of open sourcey type things you could go attend if you wanted to, or you could just, you know, form a lug and get people to come to where you are and talk about stuff.
There you go.
I don't know if Linux users groups, I know in places where there's a lot more people, Linux users groups still exist. And I know there's some online ones as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ones we used to run, yeah.
Fizzled out.
Yeah. Long gone.
So. Yeah. They're all like DevOps groups and stuff like that now. That's about all I see now.
Yeah, the ones that we were involved in, you know, Russ and I started a couple and got involved in others. The first dozen meetings, they were well attended. And then from that point on, it just, you lose one or two people every time.
Yeah, and they're all switching over to Windows. They said, screw it.
Yeah.
Part of them did, actually. I'm sure
they probably did.
There was another group that was meeting next door to us. It was like a Windows group, and we would see the same people coming in, going into the Windows group, and I'm like, hey, you know, so
yeah. But yeah, screw them. No, just
hey, I don't mind the Windows too much. You know, it works.
It does work
sometimes.
And you can install Linux on your Windows now. So there's excuse.
That's true. Yep.
I got Ubuntu on mine. What do you got on yours?
I have a brain fart. What's the thing that
Linux Mint, Debian?
No. It's not a distribution. Well, it kind of is a distribution. It's the
Cygwin.
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. That's old school. We don't do that anymore. You install the Windows subsystem for Linux, WSL, and then you can install any distribution, including Arch, if you're really crazy.
Yeah, I'm not that crazy.
Yeah. Although I tried to install a snap on there and that didn't work out too well. So
you and your snaps, knock off your snapping. Snapping, yeah. Snapchatting. You're just crazy with the snapping.
I'm just a snapper.
I don't even know what that means, but we probably shouldn't really pursue it.
Snapper?
Well, yes. The red version. Yeah. It's probably slang for something else too. Dave in the chat room says the Halloween Hamfest is in Kirkwood, which is just outside of St. Louis, in late October. Interesting. Yeah.
That's coming right up. That'll be next week.
Yeah, right. That was probably the same week as our concert, which means we won't be able to go to it.
But. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll mention that again in October if you mention it to us. Right. In October.
Yeah, right. If that comes up again in the chat room, we'll definitely mention it.
Hey, what's on the stove tonight?
Well, the stove tonight was what Russ actually had for dinner.
And what you had for dinner as well. I didn't eat alone.
Maybe you did.
No, I didn't.
No, okay, just checking. So Russ has recently dubbed these hamiches. Don't know why.
I was thinking brevity yesterday. I was like, I said sandwiches and then ham sandwiches, and it's like, oh, hamiches. Yeah. There we go. So
anyway, the recipe this week are for baked ham sandwiches. I guess that would be the easiest way to define them. And in that recipe, you need some honey roasted deli ham, some Swiss cheese, some mayonnaise, some poppy seeds, some Dijon mustard, some butter, onion powder, Worcestershire sauce, and sandwich buns of your choice. The suggested buns are King's Hawaiian slider rolls, but any sub or split rolls will work. Spread some mayonnaise on the interior sides of your bun. Add some ham and cheese to that. Put them where they're touching each other in a pan. And in a bowl, whisk together your poppy seeds, your mustard, your butter, your onion powder, and your Worcestershire. Pour over the top. Let them set for a few minutes. Pop them in the oven. And in about 20 minutes, you've got dinner. So
I kind of feel like this was half of the thing, that joke about how do you make a ham sandwich, and you start with creating the universe. So
kind of.
We skipped over that part and then explained how to make a ham sandwich. Let's see.
Yes, but these are not just the American ham sandwich.
No, they're much better than that, actually, because they have poppy seeds on them, which makes it awesome. But
and onion powder.
We should warn you that if you have a drug test coming up, don't make these.
Yeah. Of course.
Too much poppies, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Russ loves poppy seeds.
Oh, yeah. I totally love poppy seeds.
So I mix poppy seeds in the butter, and then I dump a whole bunch of poppy seeds on top of them once I'm done dumping butter on the top. So, yeah, his was, could you see your bun for the poppy seeds?
It was kind of black.
Okay, just checking. But so, yeah. But
I'm not complaining at all.
Half a bottle of poppy seeds went on your bun, so.
Woohoo.
Yeah, so don't go drug test anytime in the near future.
Gene would like to know if these hamiches are as good as kimchi and peanut butter.
I've never mixed kimchi and peanut butter together, so I wouldn't know. But we'll go for that, sure. I actually like kimchi, so.
Yeah.
And I'm peanut butter's okay.
I love me some peanut butter, so I'm going to have to try peanut butter and kimchi sometime.
Have you ever had kimchi?
I don't believe I have.
We can take care of that.
It's yummy.
It is yummy. So a lot of people can't. It's very pungent, though. It's a lot like sauerkraut. So.
No, I disagree.
Well, in the pungency factor of it. No, it's a totally different scale. Yeah, okay.
It's a totally different scale. My favorite kimchi is actually cucumber kimchi, and that's really good. Favorite prepared kimchi, of course, is in a stew. You can get a good. Yeah, a good kimchi stew is, kimchi is normally served cold. So, like, it's kind of weird. It's just kind of a weird flavor cold. I don't know. I don't like my spicy stuff to be cold, really. So yeah, when I had it in stew, I thought it was awesome. Another good way to have it is with the Korean barbecue, of course. And like then just load it on and eat it all up. It's a superfood after all, so yeah. Enjoy it.
All right. I'm definitely going to have to try some kimchi then. All right. So moving on from the delicious hamiches and this talk of peanut butter and kimchi, we'll talk about the scotch that I have tonight, which is a Port Dundas 12-year, and it's bottled at 40% ABV. That's 80 proof. It's a lowland scotch, and there aren't that many lowland scotches, so it's kind of nice to be able to try one now and again. The color on it is a light, clean, slightly mahoganied yellow is what I would call it. It's a slightly darker yellow than, you know, the other yellow we talked about. I did all the tasting on this earlier, so I wouldn't have to like just dwell on it, but the nose on it, and I do have some here though, so you can, I don't know how that's going to play on the recording, but there you go. The nose on it is actually rather nice. It has notes of cream, like sweet cream, banana, malted barley, cereal grain, vanilla, caramel, and a light, light touch of cinnamon. So it's very nice on the nose. And even though it has a lot of flavors in it, I wouldn't call it complex, but you can pull a lot out of it. On the taste, some of the things are the same and some of the things are different. You still get the banana and the vanilla. You also get an essence of chocolate-covered cherry. A little green grass, a little pepper spice, and some ginger. So there's actually kind of a lot going on in here. And the Port Dundas Distillery started in the late 1800s and went up until 2011. And then they closed, and they use all their grains and stuff to make this stuff still. I guess until it's gone, it was purchased by Diageo, so they're still making it. You can pick this up for about $40 for a 750 milliliter bottle. And I rather enjoy this, even though it's not peated. It has a nice taste to it. It's actually rather sweet for a scotch. So I'm going to give it a quite favorable B rating of an 85. So check out Port Dundas 12-year if you can find it in a liquor store near you. And I will continue to drink a little bit of mine while Bill tells us about his stuff.
Yeah, today I'm enjoying a nice brew from the Alaskan Brewing Company, and this is up in Juneau, Alaska, and this is their Spruce IPA. It's an India Pale Ale brewed with spruce tips, and it's 7% alcohol per volume, and it tastes like you're drinking a tree. It's really cool.
Okay, I'm not sure I'd want to drink a beer that tastes like a tree, but
in case your beer hoppy enough, let's add some spruce flavor too.
Let's add a tree to it.
How much green leafy green needly crap can you add to a beer?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. They do the same kind of thing with their winter IPA, and it tastes like Christmas. That's all I can think of. It's like an IPA at Christmas is what it tastes like. It has such a unique flavor. And they're the only company, only brewing company that I've had that does this. And they've done it with two different beers. And I saw this one in the store. It's got a great picture of an owl on the bottle. And it just has such an interesting flavor, an interesting note to it with the spruce tips in it. Definitely worth trying if you have it available in your area. I would say it's a worthy purchase.
All right, very good. So I don't know if I can take an IPA that's like more IPA than an IPA, but
it tastes like a it's Christmas actually like tree.
The IPA side is real.
It tastes like Christmas.
It's subtle. Yeah, yeah. No, the IPA is like the subtle part of it. So it's interesting.
Whatever.
Boy, it tastes like an elf that just Sonny Bode in himself.
Yeah, it's like if you took the elf on a shelf and you ground it up and like sprinkle it over your IPA.
Ew.
And then you burned all your credit card bills from Christmas. That's what it tastes like.
Wow.
All right.
Is that visual enough for you?
Sure.
Sure.
Awesome.
Let's see. Let's find out where we can get this stuff.
probably nowhere around here.
Well, let's see.
I've been able to find it almost everywhere. Well, it's here. Yeah, obviously here. But I was getting this in, was I getting this in Florida too? I'm not sure.
Find Our Beer, Alaskan Brewing Company.
Let's see where they have export to.
Missouri is not one of the states. However, Illinois is.
Where at?
I don't know. Let's see. Stores, restaurants within 100 miles of, well, yeah, screw that. Anyway, it's an apparently not available here in Missouri, so we will not be able to get it. It is available in Illinois and Texas, though. Now, interesting, I see a little hole in their map. I was kind of curious. It's available in all of the western states except for Utah.
Interesting.
So, I don't know.
Well, you know, there's not much to go into Utah.
Well, that's true. They direct their trucks to drive around Utah. So, which I could recommend as well. So I guess that's it. Unless we have anyone in the chat room who wants to talk about anything, we have Dave and we have Gene. And I think that's all, because it's a Thursday and people have like better things to do than listen to us talk about nothing.
Yeah. Well.
That's okay. We'll get them in the feed. We can just sit here and hum all night. Actually, I can finish off my
scotch.
Bill can have some more of his pine tree in a glass.
Pine tree and a glass.
Whatever.
I feel like I'm on the mountain. I'm losing my...
Do you feel like you're walking down it?
Yeah, I feel like I'm walking down it. I guess I didn't talk about that.
Right? Yeah, I asked Russ yesterday. I was like, so how did Bill's ski trip go? And he's like, yeah, it's a bad situation.
Yeah, I shredded my binding right off the front of my ski. I was going down real fast because I was like so cool and the snow was so good. And then I kind of got to the point I was like, well, I'm going too fast. So I was like, oh, there's some nice little powder. Let me roll into the powder and slow down a little bit. And well, one of my skis stopped and the rest of me kept going. So I ripped the front of my binding off. It like literally disengaged from the actual mount that mounts to the ski. So like the whole plastic piece just kind of ripped forward and went off. And it was like 40 foot down the mountain. And my ski was 40 foot behind me up the mountain. And I was laying back looking at the sky saying, that didn't work out so well. So I had to get all of my parts back together and had to go to finish going down the part of the hill I was on, which was not the part of the hill that goes down to the parking lot or anything. So I had to ride the back up with my ski in one hand and the other ski still attached to my foot. And then I walked down from that point all the way to the bar. And drank myself silly until my friend finished up having his fun ski day, and then I left, and he drove my drunk ass home.
Yay!
Actually, I think you had the better day, quite frankly. But
yeah, you know, I had like at least 15,000 feet in, or like at least about 12 or 14,000 vertical feet in by that time. So I'd gotten my day's worth. So I was happy.
Yep, sounds good.
It was beautiful powder though, 17 inches and 48 hours though.
Yeah, I did see that one video you took of your friends skiing, and it did look really, really nice. See, when in New Hampshire, getting that powder, you know, it happened all the time, but I was never on the ski hill when it happened. It was always after it had already become an icy, you know.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
like you need your ice skates, not snow skates.
Not skis, yeah. Right. Yep. You have to have really, really good edges.
Yeah. So because I don't go very often, like I bought I brought a 6 ticks pass, which basically gives me six lift tickets. I pick the times to be convenient to snow and not necessarily because I want to go skiing that weekend. So it does offer me a little bit more flexibility. And though I don't ski a lot, I've gotten those 6 days and I think did I get 1 or 2 days at Bridger? I think only one day at Bridger Bowl. So I've only skied like 7 times this season. So I'm not an avid professional skier. My friends that I skied with about a month ago already had like 700,000 vertical feet in for the year. So they're a little bit more serious than I am. In fact, one of them was out hella skiing in Canada the past week. So I'm not quite there.
Yeah. Go ahead and have him examined by a psychiatrist.
Yeah, exactly. We need to get out of here.
Yeah, let's get the hell out of here. That's episode number 219, The Weekender. I don't remember which Weekender it is. I think it's, what, 7 at this point?
Yeah, we've done quite a few.
Yeah,
something like that. Anyway, you'll find out when you see it in the stream. So I want to thank Dave and Gene for showing up and listening live, and whoever else is on the stream who didn't pop into the chat room. But we're going to sign off for now. We'll do another one of these in 2 weeks, but we will have the next show, episode number 220, coming up on Monday. So everybody have a great old weekend, this one and the next one. And we'll talk about some more stuff to make your weekend fun the next time we do this one. But in the meantime, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHSLive. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.